The views given on the following program are not necessarily the views of the station management or staff. Since individual situations can and will be different, please remember this when exercising any options presented by our guests.
Success is equated with excess. The ambition for excess wrecks us. As the top of the mountain becomes the bottom line, where success is equated with excess.
This is Care for My Wealth. With Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, your fee-only investment firm. Now, here's your Care for My Wealth guy, Chris Klein.
This is Care for My Wealth here. Fox Sports 1070 The Game, hanging out this Saturday morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. Great website, great resource to learn more about Chris and his team at Capstone Wealth Management. CareForMyWealth.com. That's care, C-A-R-E, for MyWealth.com. Got a great website, great resource. Telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can also email Chris info at CareForMyWealth.com. That's I-N-F-O at CareForMyWealth.com. Chris, how you doing this beautiful Saturday morning?
I am good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, and there's a lot going on. Even when, I could say even like a couple of years ago, you and I would be talking, there was always stuff happening. The past few months have been especially exciting with just a lot of different things going on. And one of the areas that I know you want to get into this week is some of the information coming from the central banks and kind of what their role is and what people generally expect from the central bank and what the reality is of those central banks as well. Let's talk about that, Chris.
Yeah. So one of the things, as you know, that I've attempted to try and teach over, well, a long time, is that you have to have a process to be able to keep from you getting BS'd by the officials. And I'm serious about that. And let me give you an example of what I mean, because I think this is a valuable explanation and understanding as to why we do not believe in the Fed's premise. What's the Fed's premise? The Fed's premise is that they can bend economic reality. They can't. And they're proving it to everybody live for everyone to see. Now, if you think the Fed's going to come rescue you in the near term, I'm telling you, as an investor, they're not. They have made it abundantly clear the so-called Fed put is off the table. Now, I know everyone wants to talk about emergency this, emergency that, and oh, they'll have a meeting and whatnot. They are so locked into the attempt to kill inflation that they don't have a choice but to do what they're doing. And that is killing growth with demand destruction, which is exactly what they said they do, and killing equity markets because systems just don't function well when you have slowing growth and the Federal Reserve or other global central banks, because it's not just here, across the globe are tightening into that slowdown. Now, we talked about this in January. I said, look, if we're heading into a deep quad four, which is growth decelerating and on the periphery disinflation, and the Fed tightens into that, it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a train wreck. You can't expect anything good to come from tightening into a slowdown. And that's all that's been happening. And the reason why I say you can't believe a thing that comes out of an official's mouth is that they're getting in front of the people today, me and you, Sean, yeah, and everyone else who might be paying attention as an investor, and they're not even trying to hide anymore. They're just flat out lying. Now, if that doesn't just make you crazy angry, I don't know what will. But if you're attempting to build your investment portfolio without a process by simply listening to officialdom that, oh, the Fed's this or the Fed's that, you gotta think that through. And I'm going to give you a quote of what Chairman Jay Powell said at his press conference this week when they raised interest rates by 75 basis points. He said, quote, "There's no sign of a broader slowdown that I can see." What? Really? Meanwhile, their own Atlanta Fed just took their GDP estimates to zero. I don't know. That appears like a broader slowdown, but it gets even better. He also said, quote, "Overall economic activity appears to have picked up after edging down in the first quarter," end quote. I mean, come on. Seriously? So every central bank on the planet, oh, by the way, with the exception of China, China is actually engaging in a form of quantitative easing. They're actually loosening monetary policy into the economic slowdown that they are in the process of coming out of. Mm-hmm. And surprise, surprise, their equity markets bullish trade and trend. For anyone joining us for the very first time, thank you. Appreciate it. Please come back. Trade and trend is simply a time series. Trade is 3 weeks or less. Trend is 3 months or more. Why do we talk that way? Because the risk management modeling system that we subscribe to and process through with HedgEye Risk Management is built with an attempt to front run things. What's it attempting to front run? The machine and the global central banks. And the only way you can front run the global central banks is to understand rate of change math. And if you do rate of change math correctly, you'll get the change that's coming with GDP and inflation, and you'll be able to front run what the Fed's doing with monetary policy. And if you can stay in front of that, you'll know the times that they're likely going to tighten into a slowdown, causing a train wreck now, and the times that they're going to ease and then create a new bull market. And again, that is not an environment that we're seeing in the cards in the near term or even the intermediate term at this process. So the trade 3 weeks or less is valuable because the machine, i.e. Wall Street, chases 1 month price momentum. Anything that gains or loses 1 month price momentum is going to get chased by the machine. If something breaks 1 month price momentum, boom, it's going to want to chase it lower. If it goes up above and gets positive 1 month price momentum, boom, the machine's going to want to chase it higher. So whenever you hear me say trade or trend, it's just a functional time series to understand what we're attempting to do in terms of either getting in the way or out of the way. Now, here's where things stand, Sean. And this is where it's very, very tough for a lot of people, I'm sure, who are listening right now. And that is people that have been sold a pie chart, 60% stock, 40% bonds. A risk parity model, as it's called. Well, you have stocks, you have bonds. And that way, when one goes down, the other one goes up and you'll be okay in the long run. You won't get beat up as bad as the stock market. That's the way it's typically talked about.
Yeah.
Except nobody ever talks about what happens inside an inflationary bear market. And this is an inflationary bear market. And when you have that, you have risk parity assets, stocks and bonds, doing the same thing. They're correlated one-to-one, or they're correlated very heavily with one another. In other words, bonds go up, stocks go up, bonds go down, stocks go down. Well, if you're in an inflationary bear market and it goes up and down in a downward fashion, and yet both of those asset classes are going down, you can see where risk parity really gets hit on the chin, right? But people have to recognize that where they stand right now, and this is why it's tough. They're looking at it saying, all right, portfolios for people who have no process or are following a risk parity model, or have been sold a pie chart of 60 this, 40 that, or whatever it might be, they're sitting right now down 25 to 35% on those assets. That's a very uncomfortable place to be in an attempt to make a decision on something. Mm-hmm. The decision that people have to make right now is, okay, do I hope that everything gets back to normal and we see a gain? Or do I cut bait and run? And all that depends on what the cycle is saying. The cycle is still telling us that we're headed through a deep quad four, which is slowing growth, disinflation on the margins. And when I say disinflation, if you start looking at on a month over month, week over week basis of some of the soft commodities that trade on the open market, you'd start to see that some of these things are actually down. Industrial metals, example, copper, week over week is down about 6.6%. Iron ore is down 9.3%. Platinum is down 4.5%. Silver is down 1.2%. Steel down about 2.25%. Month over month, steel's down 18%, right? Copper's down roughly 4%. So we're starting to see some of the disinflationary things that happen when high prices take care of high prices. Sean, I say flippantly sometimes, but it is actually true. Do you know what cures high prices?
What's that?
High prices. And I get the same look and laughter, like, oh, that's kind of funny. Well, seriously, I mean, if something gets too expensive, what do?
Lower the price?
You don't buy it. So whoever's manufacturing that thing, or whoever's selling that thing, they'll come to realize that, hey, guess what? Our market's drying up. I guess we got to adjust our price. Now, some of that is in a position where they are unable to adjust their price because their input costs on a leg are still really high. So even though we're seeing peripherally a disinflationary cycle starting to happen in some of the agricultural things, like, for example, month over month, wheat is down 16%, lumber's down 22%, palm oil, which is in a lot of things, by the way, is down 11%, canola oil's down 8.5%, sugar's down 6%, sunflower oil's down 7%, rapeseed oil, that's down roughly 8%, or I think it's pronounced rapeseed. Potatoes, they're down 40.9% month over month. How about that? Wow. I guess we should eat more potatoes. I don't know. But you get my point. Things start to disinflate. And then once the month over month process starts to show disinflation, the machine chases it in that direction. And so that's what we're seeing right now. And so people step back and say, well, yeah, but man, I'm still experiencing really high costs of living. Yes, you are. And that's because this stuff takes time to work through the economy. Even though it's disinflating at the commodity space level, it's not going to show up in food costs and other things for several months. And by that time, the Federal Reserve is still going to be looking in the rearview mirror at sticky high inflation, probably with a 7 handle going into next year, and the high and rising likelihood that we're not going to see the employment market give us any real major signs of problems until it's too late. We already know for a fact that there are a number of companies that are starting to lay people off. And so slow but surely, we're going to start to see jobless claims tick up. But as those jobless claims start to tick up, they're not going to just all of a sudden fall out of bed until they do. Mm-hmm. Remember, risk happens slowly and then all at once. And for some people right now, they feel like what's happened in the equity markets, the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Russell 2000, the Dow, it doesn't matter, whatever major index you look at, there are a number of people that look at this and feel like, well, it just happened all at once. It didn't happen all at once. It started with volatility moving from bearish trend to bullish trend. And you remember when we started talking about that back in December. And then it really started to move in January. And we said, hey, guess what? The S&P on January the 19th just flipped bearish trend. That's not good. If you're invested, you might want to start protecting your portfolio on any green days you get in the market. People have not been taught how to handle bear markets. They've simply been told, sit, relax, enjoy the ride, it'll come back. That's what people get told. I think that's a load of garbage. I'm not okay with that. Now ask yourself the question, how would you feel right now in this market with your assets if those assets from where we sit today went down another 25%? Now I can hear it already. Yeah. The scoffing of, that's not going to happen. Man, there's lots of stuff that's just like, you know, hot. Everything looks okay. You know, I mean, man, look at all the building that's going on. Look at all the economic activity. I get it. These things come through on a lag. But market-wise, it's a discounting mechanism. And you have to ask yourself, what would happen if the Fed follows through on exactly what they've told us they're going to do and have been doing and continue to give us what the market's pricing in? Right now, through yesterday, the market is pricing in, let me look at my handy dandy notebook, only 7.99 hikes, interest rate hikes to go.
That's so, it.
Yeah, 7.99 interest rate hikes, if we presume each one of those hikes represents a 25 basis point move. I mean, you're talking interest rates that the market is anticipating or expecting to be much higher. Well, that constricts economic activity. And what we can't forget is that the market functions on rate of change math. And when you are comparing rate of change math, what you have to do is have a base effect. You have to have something from which you're comparing. And that something is earnings and sales. And if you look at the Q1 2021 data and the Q2 2022 data, what you see are base effects that are through the roof because of the acceleration that took place from 2020 coming out of the pandemic. Those numbers are what these companies have to attempt to comp to, and they can't hit it. So what do we see? We see companies coming out and they're giving full year guidance that they're dropping. They're missing earnings numbers. They're doing all this stuff, Sean, that we talked about 2 months ago. How in the world do you know that this is happening? Simply because it's a function of understanding rate of change math, accelerations and decelerations from a base effect, knowing for a fact that the Fed cannot bend economic reality and that they always look in the rearview mirror, and that when they see sticky high inflation, they're going to attempt to attack it at exactly the wrong time and exactly late every time. And here's where you're at. So now you have to ask yourself, if the Fed is successful at rolling off their balance sheet to the extent that they said they are, selling mortgage-backed securities, selling treasuries to the tune of 30 and then 45 and then $60 billion a month, alongside raising interest rates, that is an exceedingly tight monetary system at exactly the wrong time when growth is slowing. So you have to ask yourself, okay, if in the event they're successful, does that likely mean we see more downside in the global markets? And my answer to that is yes, it is. Bonds aren't a safe place to stay anymore because interest rates have just broke out above the Q4 2018 levels. Now, are they going to keep going? I have no idea. Our modeling systems with price, volume, and volatility on the 30-year, the 10-year, and the 2-year treasury yield suggest, yeah, they're going to keep going up. So that makes bonds an uninvestable environment, not so much because of that interest rate movement, because of volatility. Bond volatility has shot up through the roof. And you remember about 3 weeks ago, I said, hey, good news. Bond volatility just sliced through trend. If it keeps doing that, that makes bonds investable. And inside a quad four cycle, that makes a great place for us to be able to allocate some capital. Well, guess what? It was a head fake. It came down and the next thing you know, it went boom, shot right back up again, right? So all of a sudden you've got this situation where bond volatility is screaming at people, hey, don't buy bonds. It's an inflationary bear market. It's just going to lop your head off. And that's still where we're at. In fact, I've got to the point where not only am I not interested in owning any bonds, I certainly don't want to buy any. I'm at a point where I'm ready to short them again.
Oh.
Yeah, because yields are telling us that this inflationary bear market is such that it, in fact, wants to keep moving yields higher. So the bond market's trading like inflation's never going to end. The stock market's trading like the Federal Reserve is never going to stop. And that's something to keep in mind.
Talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Great website, great resource to learn more about Chris and his team. The important thing to do this morning, they'll pick up the phone, give Chris a call. The telephone number at Capstone Wealth Management to talk with Chris, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. One more time, 866-596-9886 for Chris Klein. And of course, email info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. We'll continue our conversation with Chris, talk a little bit more about what's been going on when it comes to risk. And of course, the importance of having a plan. We'll talk with Chris about that. We will do that next as Care for My Wealth continues here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game, hanging out this Saturday morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. During the break, you didn't get a chance to check out the website. Now's the time to type that in, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Learn more about Chris and his team at Capstone Wealth Management, how they can help you. Now it's more important than ever to be talking with Chris, somebody that's going to be actively managing your money, your portfolio. Again, Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management would love to talk with you. The easiest thing to do is pick up the phone and give them a call, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Email info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. Bankrate.com. And Chris, you're talking in the last segment about some of the indicators and what you're seeing, and of course, kind of the big picture stuff. I know one of the things, I think one of the first shows we ever did, you used the phrase, follow the math. The math doesn't lie. Let's talk about some of the data points that kind of that back up a lot of what you're seeing, and kind of that underlying those numbers that you're seeing, they're saying, all right, this is why we are where we are. And more importantly, this is why we're likely going where it looks like we're going.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that this is for anyone who might be listening to us for the first time, Sean, I think that this is perhaps hard for them to really come to grips with, because most people just haven't been taught what rate of change math means and what it looks like and why markets function that way. And to some extent, it's simply because markets have changed, you know, and now some people hearing that will go, bah, nothing ever changes. Well, yeah, you know what? Markets have changed. And if all you're doing is picking things based on valuation, you're doing that with, you're basically making choices and decisions off someone's opinion, because that's really what a valuation is. Oh, this company is going to be worth X because we expect it to earn Y, and this thing is happening over there, and blah, blah, blah. And they come up with what they think it's worth. Well, that's an opinion. But yet rate of change doesn't, it's not an opinion. It says, hey, guess what? Here's exactly what the number was for this particular quarter. Here's what consensus, if you will, is suggesting. And we're saying it's a rate of change acceleration or deceleration. And then you can start to put your models together from there. But all of those points are put together from what has been reported, all the way down the line, to figure out what goes into, you know, like, for example, a GDP modeling system, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's tons and tons and tons of metrics that go into figuring out, is GDP going to accelerate or decelerate? I mean, you look at real disposable personal income, savings, headline retail sales, auto sales, mortgage purchase applications, non-farm payroll stuff, total employees on the non-farm payroll stuff. I mean, the list is long, right? Mm-hmm. And so understanding what the data is saying on a rate of change basis, considering historical context, is valuable in terms of helping identify how to structure stuff. And so I commented at the beginning of the show a quote from Chair Powell of the Federal Reserve: overall economic activity appears to have picked up after edging down in the first quarter. Okay, well, that makes no sense at all. Let me give you a few things to consider. Mm-hmm. The Philly Fed Manufacturing Survey on their forward outlook just hit negative 6.8. Now, guess when the last time it hit anywhere near negative 6.8?
I don't even know. 2009.
Close. Right? Eight. Close. It was about May of 2008. When would have been a good time to sell in 2008? And it May, June, somewhere in there. Just, right?
Yep.
these time series, when you start looking at them on a historical context, can give you some perspective. How about housing starts, right? Everybody talks about the value of housing, and man, it's on fire. And it is. Home price appreciation continues to just be very, very, very strong. And it's on a leg, right? So housing starts month over month change was down 261 basis points. Now think about that. This is the biggest decline that we've seen literally in over a year. So housing starts are a big deal to the economic cycle and a very big deal to what's happening in the overall rate of change process. How about consumer confidence? Consumer confidence for the University of Michigan just tagged 50.2. Now, when I look at the data series of 50.2, I go all the way back to June of 1984, and it still hasn't been that low. June of 1984 is a long time, right? That goes back very, very long, long, long way. Confidence is not good. The wealth effect, in other words, the amount of money that people have lost in this cycle is tremendous. I mean, we're talking over $9 trillion lopped off of the S&P 500. Let that sink in for just a second, $9 trillion. And then add crypto to that of roughly another trillion, right? Mm-hmm. And then add bonds to that, and then add mortgages to that. The numbers are getting a little bit crazy, but we're still in a cycle where the Fed says inflation's too high and we have to fight it. So the NFIB small business sentiment, small businesses are the largest overall net employers out there. They are the engine of economic growth in the U.S. NFIB small business sentiment forward outlook just tagged for the most recent number a negative 54. Now, in context, that number doesn't mean anything, right? However, I got to go all the way back to pre-1990 to find anything even close. In 2008, at the beginning of the recession, the number came down only to about a minus 20. This is minus 54, right? If small businesses have that lack of degree of confidence, how much do you think they're going to be willing to go out and hire and buy and expand?
No, not going to happen.
I don't think very, very much, right? Yeah. MBA mortgage purchase applications just ticked down to 217. What does that mean? Well, the cycle high was at 384. What are we getting? We're getting a rapid deceleration in mortgage purchase applications, which would totally make sense if you look at the interest rate doubling inside of the last, 3 months, 2 months? Affordability for a house has dramatically been just slammed because of what's happening in the open market for yields. It's making bond buyers very, very, very skittish. In other words, the secondary market that would typically buy the mortgages that are being initiated and generated through various banks and brokerage operations, they don't want them. They're going no bid. Okay. If nobody wants to buy the mortgage bond, what has to happen? Well, the mortgage bond buyer wants more yield to be able to take care of the risk, which means, of course, they're going to have to find ways to raise yields on those mortgages. It's that kind of an environment that makes home price affordability very problematic. My comment about the wealth effect a little bit ago is valuable because what people need to recognize is that as the wealth effect gets squeezed, in other words, as people watch their wealth get deteriorated in the midst of a bear market, it shaves a tremendous amount of GDP off the docket. And what we're looking at is the high and rising likelihood that the next GDP print is actually a negative, right? Mm-hmm. That means ticked zero, negative growth, as they call it, which I always find a little bit funny. But nevertheless, it's not funny that it's happening.
No,
the nomenclature is what's funny. Negative growth? Okay,
possible?
Well... I guess if that's what you say, fine. But negative growth, recession, GDP less than zero. I mean, those are things that are problematic, and it's all being perpetuated by what the Fed is doing with monetary policy. But people have become so drunk with debt and the ability to believe that the Fed always comes to the rescue that they simply are not capitulating. There's no panic. And I'll give you an example. So if you look at markets, right? So Thursday of this week, the S&P 500 was down on the day 3.31%, right?
Okay.
On that particular day, our client portfolios were up anywhere from 0.25% to about 0.55%. Why? It's because we have a go anywhere global macro strategy that allows us to invest in anything, anywhere. And we are simply not net long U.S. equities. We're tilted net short U.S. equities, which means when markets drop, our portfolios will come up some. And then from that, we have other assets, like, for example, a large position in the U.S. dollar, short euros. You want to be short yen because that's, again, the same as having a long dollar. We've got almost 50% cash. We've got some gold. We've got interest rate hedges on. I mean, there's things in place in an attempt to try and position the portfolios that are specific to an economic cycle that is an inflationary bear. So the NASDAQ on Thursday was off actually 4.08%. So in one day, you got the market down 4%, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at that exact same time, you have the Federal Reserve saying, there's no problem. It's really okay. We're not seeing growth, you know, problematic. It's not an issue. Really, the market is telling you something completely different. And so all of that expectation that the Fed's going to come riding to the rescue on a white horse, so far, I see zero signs of that. And I mean zero. So all I'm attempting to do is trying to help people come to the reality that at some point you have to make a choice and a decision on how you want to handle your capital. Do you want to ride it through the bear market and spend whatever amount of time it takes to come back? Which, oh, by the way, you got to do the math on this. Human beings are terrible at just kind of saying, well, I'm going to hope. And they don't do rate of change math. If you lose 50% of your capital, you have to make 100% just to get back to even. Last time I checked, 100% return in any market in a fairly short period of time is like kind of out of the ordinary, yeah. Right? That's not something that we typically run into. So I just want you to contextualize for yourself and your family, what does it look like and feel like if in the event we end up getting another 2002 or 2000 to 2002, which was a very long, drug out, deep, problematic quad four bear market, or a 2008, or if you're old enough, go back into the 70s and ask yourself, how did that feel with that inflationary bear market? Which, by the way, is about the last time we've actually seen a real inflationary bear market like we've experienced right now. And as I mentioned, this is not a domestic thing. This is a global thing. Every major central bank on the planet, with the exception of China, is in tightening mode. The Swiss actually raised interest rates by 50 basis points, 0.5%. That was a surprise. It was an emergency. Why a surprise? Because they haven't raised rates for 15 years. Nobody was expecting that. And yet they did. So good luck with that. That's not likely going to work out too well for you. Alongside watching industrial production, housing starts, building permits, all these things decelerating on the margin. And that deceleration feeds right into that deceleration of growth and eventually the disinflation. The disinflation, eventually, when it comes, will be good, obviously, because it'll help all of us with pricing, mm-hmm. but it'll get the Fed to recognize that, oh, good, our stuff is working. Well, by that time, the train's already going to have hit the bricks. I mean, it's by the time the Fed changes tune, mm-hmm. you're already going to be down like a lot. And it's not to suggest that 30 isn't a lot. It is. But somebody asked me, would you be surprised to see this down 50% when it's over? And my answer was, no, I'm sorry, I wouldn't be. Do I know it's going to do that? No, I don't have any idea that it's going to do that. All I know is what the math tells me every single day. And what the economic cycle is suggesting based on the rate of change math for all the data points. And all I can do is calculate and structure the portfolio for today, for tomorrow, for today, for next week, today, for next month, this week, this month, this quarter. I got to focus on this short term so that we get the long term right. Don't give in to saying, well, I'm a long term investor, so I'll just ride it into the abyss. Mm-hmm. That's not the right answer if you're attempting to risk manage your portfolio. And so I have no idea whether or not it will be down more or less than what it already is. But when asked, do I think it could? My answer is, yeah, I do, only because of all the stuff I'm seeing.
Is there an area, Chris, and I know we've talked in the past, and you mentioned kind of go anywhere investing, and I'm often just amazed at some of the areas that you're following and tracking globally in different sectors. Are there any areas out there that are kind of stand out right now to you, saying that these are kind of bucking this global trend right now? And are there some of these things that you say, you know what, this might actually be something?
China.
Yep.
I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but it's the truth. And it's literally the only global market that is bearish trade and trend, or excuse me, bullish trade and trend. And it keeps signaling higher highs and higher lows. Why? Well, because on the periphery, we're getting signals that the Chinese government is actually engaging in a form of quantitative easing. They're loosening their policy. They're not tightening it. So do I like the Chinese policy? No, not necessarily. I don't think communist regimes are really any good at all. Do I think that it's problematic for the Chinese regime to be strengthening? Yeah, absolutely. My job isn't to be political. My job is to do everything I can to make money and protect money. It's not about politics. If you mix your politics in your investing, you're likely going to get hurt. Don't do that if you can. And if you can't, have somebody help you to get through that so that you can deal with the process. But China is literally the only country from a country perspective mm-hmm. that's signaling bullish trading trends. So again, time series, 3 weeks or less, 3 months or more. And it's signaling higher highs and higher lows when you calculate price, volume, and volatility. What does that mean? That means that we probably want to own some China. Mm-hmm. And you can do that through their indexes. You can do that through different exchange traded funds. And that's typically how we express a position for the benefit of our clients. We'll take a position in one of the exchange traded funds that is very liquid, something that we can buy and sell within a given day if necessary, get out of it if we have to. But it's literally the only country out there right now mm-hmm. that's signaling this. Everybody else, just not so good.
Interesting. Talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number, this is the important thing. Type this in, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886 for Chris Klein and Capstone Wealth Management. Again, the telephone number, 866-596-9886. Email info@careformywealth.com. That's I-N-F-O, info@careformywealth.com. And that website, careformywealth.com. We'll continue our conversation with Chris. We'll do that next as Care for My Wealth continues right here. Fox Sports 1070, The Game. Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Talking with Chris Klein this morning of Capstone Wealth Management. You can learn more about Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management on the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. I'll give you that number a couple more times before the end of the program today. Give you a chance to grab a pen or a pencil or punch it in on your phone. Again, the number, 866-596-9886. Three little letters mean so much to so many. G-A-S, gas. Let's talk gas, Chris.
Yeah, indeed. You know, some people will ask, hey, why is it that these prices are staying so sticky high?
Yeah.
And obviously, a lot of it has to do with the commodity itself, oil, and how it's trading. Oil is bullish trading trend. It continues signaling higher highs and higher lows. It in fact, as of yesterday, it actually traded to the downside, where if you were a trader, you'd buy it. You'd say, oh, I'm going to buy some oil because there's like 8% upside versus no downside. That's kind of how the numbers worked out. So that's one element of the high sticky gas prices. But the biggest one is inventories, right? If you look at it from the commodity front, gasoline inventories accelerated to the downside. And it's now down 10.5% year over year. And it's 6.8% below the 5-year low inventory number. We talked a little bit about this last week, where the Secretary General of OPEC had come out and said, look, outside of a couple of our members, everybody's at max capacity, right? We're pushing out as much as we can. Now, the United States could do much more, but we need a way to transport it. And oh, by the way, trucks and rail cars are not the way to do it, but is what it is. They've shut down the pipeline, which in fact did transport an awful lot of oil from way up north down to the southern refinery capacities. We're looking at inventories for oil and gas and all this sort of stuff at like decade lows. That's not the place from which you see prices flip and start really coming down. And so as hard as that is to swallow, as hard as that is for me to tell everybody, look, you probably just need to expect some high gas prices for a while. Everything that we're seeing is suggesting that that's what's going to happen, at least on the periphery. So that's a problem because, of course, oil and gas is a big component of moving stuff through the economy, not to mention me and you and everybody else that works. And so that goes towards having a high cost of just maintaining. And that high cost of maintaining, of course, squeezes the consumer. And the consumer, as we know, is in very, very rough shape. Credit card debt's at all-time high. We're seeing on the periphery reports coming from a number of different places like buy now, pay later type companies that their delinquency rates are going up. It's all a function of what we're seeing coming from the consumer. And if we're a consumer-driven economy, which we are, then obviously that's a problem. Retail sales this week decelerated. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's this deceleration of everything except the stuff that we want to decelerate. Inflation accelerated. I mean, in Europe, for example, the Eurozone CPI for May came in at 8.1%, and that's up from 7.4 in April. Probably is going to go up again for this next month just because of what's happening with their gas market. I mean, UK gas mm-hmm. on a week over week basis is up 47%. Wow. I mean, that's a train wreck for those citizens. Yeah. They have to actually deal with that kind of stuff. Interest rate spreads. This is an important call out too. So how do you really know when there's a lot of stress in markets? Well, the spread between high yield interest rates and safe treasuries gets wider. People demand more yield from the riskier stuff. So those yields on high yield bonds go up a lot, whereas safe treasuries don't do a whole lot. We've been in an environment where twos, tens, and 30s on the US Treasury yield complex have been going up like a fair amount. But yet at the same time, we just hit cycle highs in spreads for high yields this week at 500 basis points, which is 5% over safe treasuries. Now, what does that mean? You do not have high and rising high yield spreads in a contained, safe, and normalized market. You have high and rising high yield spreads when markets are under stress and they're looking at everything saying, nothing's good here. Mm-hmm. This is bad, right? Mm-hmm. The high yield market, credit markets in general, are probably the biggest bubble known to mankind, and it still has not disinflated. We've not seen the leverage come out of the market yet. And as I commented right before, I probably got lost in a conversation there. But one of the things that I was going to point out was that we've not seen the retail investor or even institutional investors really capitulate yet. And we still haven't seen a number of big hedge funds blow up. There's been like maybe two. On Thursday, when markets were down 4%, that's a fair amount. Volume on the S&P 500 as calibrated by one of the ETFs, SPY, it's a proxy for the S&P 500. The volume for this thing was like, meh. Yeah, sure, it was up a little bit from its 10-day average, but wasn't crazy, not even a little bit. I mean, if you go back, I'll give you an example. If you go back to the bottom of the market in 2020, and of course, that was a little bit of a different bear market. It wasn't at that point inflationary, but SPY traded 407 million shares that day. On Thursday, when the markets are down 4% on the NASDAQ, SPY was traded 131 million shares. Big difference.
Oh, yeah.
Capitulation happens when everybody gets sick, throws up, can't stand anymore, and they throw in the towel and volume goes through the roof. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing that. We're seeing a slow acceleration of volume when markets are down, which tells us, yeah, people are starting to wake up to the fact that this could be bad, but they've still not completely given up. And they haven't given up on crypto either.
Oh.
One of the most recent surveys that came out that said 85% of the people who own crypto who are down 60 to 65% on that crypto ownership all plan to buy more. I think that's
wow.
Nuts. Don't do that. Don't buy crypto. Not now.
One of the things I will say with this downturn with crypto is for anyone that's on social media and was getting nonstop barrage of comments about crypto, those people have been strangely silent for a while now. I've kind of somewhat enjoyed it, but really good stuff this week. Of course, we're talking about the times we are in. It's really, really important to be working someone that has your best interest in mind, somebody that's actively managing your portfolio morning, noon, night. Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management, they are there for you. They are there to keep you upright and, again, help you out through these tough, tough times. Now is the time. Today is the day to pick up the phone. Give Chris a call. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can email Chris for more information, info@careformywealth.com. That's info@careformywealth.com. And, again, the telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Chris, you have a great weekend. You have a great Father's Day tomorrow, and I look forward to talking to you real soon, my friend.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to you, and happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. Best job ever.
It is a pretty darn good gig. Talking to Chris Klein, Care of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. This is Care for My Wealth here, Fox Sports 1070, The Game.